Tim, Marion Shopping Centre, a huge shopping centre in Adelaide, and an equally big food court, raised a bit of controversy last month when someone has taken a photograph of a mouse seen in the counter of a sushi takeaway store. Pretty disgusting.
Yeah, makes me think I'll never eat sushi again for the rest of my life.
It wasn't even a... It's a great photo, wasn't it?
Perfect.
You don't often catch a mouse just hanging out. They normally sort of scurry away before you get a chance to really get a good look at them. But yeah, there he was.
Two photos of this thing in the sushi display cabinet. And its head's just popping right up there. Like one shot, yeah, he's just sort of like buried in under the sushi almost. Next one, he's just sitting up, just, you know, surveying the sushi. The woman who was there with her kids getting some lunch quickly snapped these photos. Let the owners know, and they threw out everything that was in there. The damage is done.
As you said, the good news was they cleaned up. They were very prompt in their reaction. But we were speaking earlier. What is that the breaking point for that place for you? Would you ever, ever go back there, even though they might have used the strongest chemicals of all time to clear the decks and put in new product?
I don't think I would. I couldn't do it. I know. I think that's unreasonable. I feel it's a bit irrational because, a mouse is a rodent. It is kind of gross. But for me, there's something, some deeper psychological issue I have with...
You've got a real mouse issue, haven't you, Tim?
I do. It must be a throwback to an ancient ancestor who was maybe... I'm just speculating now, but... probably was murdered by a mouse or something. And this has been encoded into my DNA. I have this irrational problem with them. They give me the willies.
Where's your pecking order? There's mice and then there's cockroaches. Which would you prefer seeing crawling across your sushi roll before eating it?
Neither's great. But I'd have to probably go with the cockroach.
Right. You think...
What about you?
Yeah, I guess so. I think mice are really linked to like feces and and disgusting germ contamination. Cockroach is probably the same.
Yeah.
Where was your rationale behind the cockroach versus mouse?
No, oh, just because, you know.
You hate mice.
Yeah. I mean, a mouse is not as bad as a rat. What if it had been a rat? I mean, it's like the owner would end up in jail. Probably at that point. That's a serious criminal offence, isn't it? Like a mouse is a misdemeanour. A mousedemeanour. But at the point of a rat, oh my goodness, like lawyer up.
To be fair, like mice are very ingenious. They can find a way into anywhere. If there's a little hole, it doesn't even have to be the size of a... They can squeeze through a tiny, tiny little hole anywhere. And if there's food to be had, they'll find a way.
So how much is it the fault of the owners? Like, is it maybe just were they just really unlucky, or are they to blame?
Oh, you'd have to look at it closer. They claim there was some construction work going on at the shopping centre. Perhaps it's sort of made its way down the food court, had a look around, saw the KFC. Nah, that makes me feel funny afterwards. Saw the Maccas, saw the Porto chicken or whatever. And went, nah, sushi for me. So
real clean living mouse, that one.
Yeah, yep. Probably a little at fault that perhaps there's food. I'm only alleging this, obviously, but perhaps there was food around and, anything that's loose or on the ground, probably a target for mice. Tim, have you had any of your own horror experience with mice?
Well, they're not horror stories. I mean, it's I can see on one level how mice are quite cute. Like, they're kind of little furry little guys. They look, you know, they don't look mean or anything.
There's always humorous movies made about them and cartoons. And
Mickey Mouse, one of the greatest all-time characters ever. Mickey Mouse, he's your best bud. Why would you be fearful of mice? But I think you helped me process my fear. I think it is how unpredictable they are. I always feel like it's gonna, if I see one any minute, it's gonna just run up the leg of my trousers, like, or, you know, jump on my head, or you don't know where they're gonna go, and they're fast as well. They're so quick.
Yeah, yep.
But you don't have a problem with them, do you? You're cool.
Yeah, I guess so. But I have had experiences where I went from thinking, because my brother kept mice for a couple of years when he was a young boy, when he was about 8 or 9. And they were nice enough. Different colours probably made them look a bit more user-friendly, not the grey sort of mice that you see that you trap.
Stock.
Pretty much. But I was dating a young lady many, many years ago who had a 2-year-old daughter. And we're at her house one night, and she saw a mouse in her daughter's room. And she freaked out. She quickly got the girl out and put her in her
Understandable.
Own room. Yes. I was a bit more laid back about it, because we eventually trapped it off. We got two outside cement tiles and sort of cornered it off into a triangle. So it was trapped in a 30-centimetre by 30-centimetre corner of the room. She was frantic, you know, diseased, didn't want her daughter to be in the room.
And get rabies.
I was a bit laid back about it. And I said, she went off to get a bait or something from the store. I stayed, kept watch, and said, don't worry, we've got this mouse cornered. It's all good. She comes back. We open the door. The mouse is now at the top of the curtain rod. So it's jumped out of this little enclosure we've made, scaled up the curtain.
Yeah.
And I felt really bad, because I really thought, oh, yeah, a mouse can only sort of manoeuvre in that short sort of
They're crafty.
They're crafty. So.
You know, it wasn't a mouse, but the only, you know, a premonition when, you know, it's a super psychic thing where you know exactly what is about to happen before it happens. Only time I have ever had a premonition was when I saw, it wasn't a mouse, it was a frog. There was a frog on the wall of this unit that we're staying in on a holiday. It was walking up to it, and there's a frog on the wall. And honest to God, I thought in my head, I didn't even think, I knew. I just realized, I understood in that moment, that frog is going to jump on my head. And within seconds of having had that premonition, it leapt off the wall straight onto my head and then bounded off again. But, you know, that might play, that's playing into my whole issue as well, because these animals, you never know what they're going
to
do.
Give notice, say, hey, Tim, I'm about to jump on you. Are you okay with that? And if you're not, just prepare for it. You know, almost an exact same story. Was that in Cairns by any chance?
No, it was tropical, not Cairns.
Tropical. My partner, she had that very thing happen when we went on a
frog
holiday.
On the head,
on the face.
Oh,
but to be fair, it was on our hire car. It was sitting on top of the hire car, and we just thought that was amazing. A green tree frog sitting on top of a little white Hyundai Getz. So we decided to get the old. We weren't using smartphones back then. We had the camera. We decided to get in real close and take a photo, and I got my partner to get in real close, and as I'm taking it, the video, it jumped and landed right on her face.
Oh, that's horrible. So slimy, I imagine. And like the frog leaps off and there's this mucus.
And we were pretty excited about the whole, traumatised, excited about it. And we were telling the hotel manager, and they said, oh, well, as long as you didn't touch the frog, because the acids in your hand can do damage. We didn't tell them that she actually grabbed the frog from her face and threw it in the garden. But
yeah. To the hospital we go. You a dog person, newsman?
Things have changed for me, web guy. As a child, we grew up with a dog, and I loved that dog. Loved it. And now I enjoy dogs, but I am happy for someone else to do all the maintenance of the dog. So I'll go over, I love giving a dog a pat and saying, good boy, and then going home and not having the dog there.
Ever give your favourite childhood dog a big smooch on the lips?
Oh, I must admit, when I was young, I didn't mind if the dog gave me a bit of a smooch and a, you know, welcome home lick on my face. But now it's sort of, yeah, not as comfortable with it.
Well, for good reason.
How about you?
Not a massive dog person. Just, I never had one as a kid. Didn't grow up with them, really. Definitely deprived as a child. So, yeah, I'm not too fussed about dogs. Never had one. But obviously a lot of people do. And, you know, it's not that unusual for a lot of people to let their dogs give them a bit of a kiss. I've seen it happen.
Well, they're like family for most people, real close family members.
Well, you might even say they're man's best friend. You might even put it that way.
Oh, there you go. Someone should have coined that phrase.
You wouldn't pass your best friend. Anyway, sidetracked. Now, apparently, there's been a myth going around. I'm not sure if I ever knew it, that did you ever hear this myth that a dog's mouth is cleaner than a human's?
I can't see how, but no, I've never heard that.
Well, according to a story out this week, apparently some people actually thought that was the case.
Based on what?
Well, exactly, and that's what this expert has come out, and this is he's basically just trashed this myth. Sorry if you ever believed that that was true, but he says all you have to do is look, watch, smell, and you'll realise that is not true. He goes on, they raid the garbage can, blah, blah, blah. You know, they put their faces all kinds of spots you wouldn't want to be. So definitely the dog's mouth is not cleaner than a human's. And what that means is some problems for people who like to kiss their dogs. Or let the dogs, you know, it's not a kiss. You know, let the dogs lick their face.
Some do.
Well, yeah.
Some people. But yeah, yep. So yeah, even just a lick on the face, no good.
So turns out that they can potentially, they're carrying nasty stuff in their mouth that they can pass on to humans. And, you know, I don't want to over-sensationalise. I'm just quoting here from a reputable tabloid source. It can kill you.
Bum, bum, bum.
Mm-hmm. So John Oxford, a professor of something from somewhere, says it's not just what the dogs carry in their saliva. They spend half their life with their noses in nasty corners or hovering over dog droppings, so their muzzles are full of bacteria, viruses, and germs of all sorts. Now, I'm not fully blown, but I'm probably your mid-tier germaphobe.
Okay.
This is the stuff of nightmares for me. I mean, you kind of knew it was, you knew that was the case, but to just read it printed out in black and white, it's very upsetting.
Well, as you said, it's not too surprising, as the expert said there, that they're getting in there, they're eating rubbish. And when he says putting their snouts in corners, I'm thinking like other dogs' behinds.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they do that.
Yeah.
They will do that.
But I don't think, has there been any cases of people actually, if it's deadly, it doesn't sound like there's any proven cases of this. But
yeah, you want the data, don't you? What he said is that one of the most dangerous things they carry is, and this is the first time I've tried to pronounce this, on the fly, Capnocetophaga canimorsis.
Ooh, that sounds terrible.
Lives in their saliva, can cause fatal infections, including sepsis, which can lead to organ failure and even death. So, yeah, he's not stating any known case where that's happened, I guess. But if you're worried, you might have picked up Capnocetophaga canimorsis. The symptoms are similar to a lot of other illnesses, but they include fever, chills, sweats, lack of energy, but you get really sick really quick. Is the
you know what, I think most people are willing to take the risk. People love dogs and they don't mind a little bit of a lick to the face,
even at the risk of death.
Well, I met a lovely dog on the weekend. It gave me a little lick on the face.
You did it! Oh,
I wasn't really. You know, I didn't mind it.
Doesn't sound like it was consensual.
Oh, we were in an embrace. I was patting him enthusiastically, so probably deserved the lick.
Yeah, all right. Well, maybe you want to get a checkup. I don't know. But
do you want me to get you a mask to continue this podcast?
The dogs that are at greatest risk of carrying this heinous thing are ones that are come into close contact with other animals. So ones that have been kept in kennels or shelters are more susceptible. The symptoms in the dog. Now, did the dog you had an encounter with this on the weekend? Time to worry if that dog had symptoms that included dandruff.
No.
Didn't know a dog's got dandruff.
No, this one was dandruff-free.
Hair loss?
No. Well. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. A little bit of hair loss.
Yeah.
Darkened patches will show on the dog's skin or hair.
It was a black and white dog. Nah.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you might be okay because this is the extra scary bit, and this is just the final depressing cap on a terrible story that kids are at the greatest risk of catching these infections off dogs. And surely they're the ones probably most likely to be getting up close with their dogs. I know our little boy, he gets pretty much up closer to our cat than I would. I'm not sure if the same thing applies to cats.
It's a dangerous world out there, pet ownership and pet socialising.
Yeah, I mean, take your life into your hands with the pet. You know, have a pet at your own risk. Marcus, a news story this week. I don't think you're going to like it.
Why is that? Tell me about it, web guy.
It's lowbrow.
Tim, you know lowbrow's my thing, so expand, please.
I hesitate to raise this one, but I have seen it in the news. TV show called The Bachelor.
Yes.
You're a fan?
I don't watch it, but I expect if I tuned in for more than 15, 20 minutes, I'd probably get hooked into the car crash TV that it is. That would be a fair assumption. Most people watch it for the awkwardness, the bitchiness, and maybe a few for the romance. Faux romance.
It's one of those things, especially guys. I'm not sure how many would really admit to being fans of it, but I'm certainly not going to admit to being a fan of it. It is gripping in a weird way. We are social beings, and this show is just like social situations with the volume turned up to 11, and we just get to sit back in from our comfortable viewpoint and watch these things unfold, which are scenarios which, you know, we have all, you know, to a probably a lesser degree, have been in, you know, one way or another, you know, that awkward moments, bit of tension, the oddness of it all.
Love rivals.
You've been in that position many times. Women vying for your attention, or vice versa. You know, they do a bachelorette as well.
True.
So, you know, this is a very human show in a bizarre way. Anyway, what's in the news this week is behind-the-scenes sneak peek from a former contestant who's lifted the lid on the whole thing.
Don't tell me it's contrived. It's not how it seems.
Well, we'll find out.
Okay.
But this is a contestant named Ali. She was from the first Bachelor season. She's from Adelaide.
Okay.
So, you know, she's one of us, basically.
Hmm.
Now, and she just spilled the beans. There's beans everywhere.
Do they have to sign a confidential... to be confidential?
They do. I think that's while their season airs, I guess. You know, hers is a couple of years ago, so that's just free-for-all now.
Mm.
But I don't know. Do we need to go through this?
Yeah, I want to know.
Oh.
So I can pick it apart when people talk about it.
It's one of those shows that is a topic of conversation. Anyway, the rose ceremony is the big, you know, feature piece of every episode.
So that is, just say there are 10 ladies left.
Mm-hmm.
The man gives 9 roses. Is that correct?
Yeah.
One person, see you later.
Yeah. And then the serious host, Osher, comes in, blah, blah, you have not received a rose.
It was a good experience.
As if, just in case you hadn't noticed, you haven't got a rose. Now, this is what Ali says about the ceremonies. First one that they did in her season, that rose ceremony was filmed over 2 nights. It took 2 nights.
What?
So, you know, in the show, it's edited down to, it's maybe a 5 minute. Oh, or 10
feels
minute.
Like about half an hour.
Yeah, they wedge in a few ad breaks. But
two nights.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So she said you had to wear the same dress, had to get your hair done the exact same way. whole thing took ages. So this is the part of, this is where, you know, the TV magic comes in. Because, you know, what you see is actually happening, but, you know, it just took perhaps a lot longer for it to happen than the impression you get from watching the thing.
So they do seem to say very poignant and, you know, telling things. So maybe they practice them and go, wait, let me do it again. And let me break your heart in a different way.
In
a better way.
There's a director on set saying, now, when you deliver this line, I just want you to glance this way. And if you can just droop your face.
Yep.
All right. Now, this one will be no surprise. Apparently, and this, they do a reverse version, but we're talking about The Bachelor, which is Room Full of Women, One Man.
Yep.
This is what Ali says. The women are drinking so much all the time. They're drunk the whole time.
Thus, the emotional outbursts and the anger towards each other.
Yeah, it's just that little bit of literal fuel, isn't it? Just to throw on that fire. She says that the producers cottoned on that when they gave the girls more drinks, they would relax. This sounds so shady, doesn't it? And we would do more of what the producers asked of us. So a couple of things there. The producers are asking them to do things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, takes a little bit of the sheen off the TV magic again.
Interfere with that date.
Yeah, you know, you should go up there and interrupt their special private time. Chat. Yeah. So that's one thing. And second thing, they're plying them with alcohol. That doesn't seem right.
No, and I guess, I wonder if there are any savvy competitors that think, I'll just have just a little nurse my drink, have a few little sips, and I'll be alert and ready to...
The sober strategy.
Yeah.
You'd stand out, wouldn't you? That could be your pitch. Hey, you know, pick me, I'm sober. As opposed to the rest. Okay. Uh-oh. She says that it's... She says going on the show messed with her head. This is a quote. Being in the house for about 2 or 3 months, not being able to speak to anyone else, your mind is completely focused just on this man. So I'm going to break in here. That is a crazy scenario, isn't it?
It is. You don't think it's that... Well, to me, I'm shocked by how long they're in there. And they can't... I thought maybe they spend, you know, 4 hours a day doing it or something. But no.
Yeah.
3 months, just intensive bachelor focus rose training.
Some hardcore bacheloring. They're living it. Makes me think, how are they not sick of whoever the bachelor is? Like, why do they all even still care by the end? How are they not just way over whoever this guy is?
I mean,
is?
In that time, you could think, hey, he's a nice guy. Midway through, go, nah, this guy's boring as anything.
But then, what, do they just have to pretend that they're still interested for the sake of the show? There's a lot of that happening, I'm sure. I'll finish her quote. She says, my advice would be to someone considering going on The Bachelor, make sure you're in for a mental roller coaster. It's not all fun and games. So
that's most reality shows. Like, you get trapped in this little world and everyone at home sort of laughs at how you're getting worked up over trivial things. But if you're trapped in just a microcosm of a world, bound to happen.
Yeah. And they do try and, in a weird way, they do try and provoke, or they put the contestants on these shows in difficult situations. I knew someone who was on MasterChef once, and the story she told was that they were, you know, when they were staying on location, you know, just in little ways, they were deprived of just comforts. So hope, you know, the whole time, they're wanting people to lose their temper.
Mm.
So you're getting, you know, it's a stressful situation, but then you're getting prodded, you know, in all kinds of ways that we probably don't even see.
A bit like before we started this, I said to you, I need to go to the toilet, it's fairly urgent. You said, nope, need you on your toes.
I want that bladder giving you pain, and I want you to use that pain.
Hurry up.
Now, speaking of physical deprivation, the that mansion thing they all live in, it's 6 huge bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So how many of them there are to begin with? They all get piled into 6 bedrooms. They have bunk beds. Yeah, literally living on top of each other. And now this gets a little racy here. She says in her season, we did suspect two of the girls were hooking up.
Way. Should have started. You've buried the lead once again, web guy.
That could be a whole spin-off show, couldn't it? She says they're always staying in their room and would never come out together. We all thought something was going on. Oh. I think there is a tabloid story of, you know, some former contestants being in a relationship. I'm not on top of the detail, but sounds familiar. Now, overall, should you go on the show? Yes or no? This contestant, Ali, says go for it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. She says it made her so strong as a person, mentally, physically, and, you know, despite the hardships, it was really fun. And, you know, you don't think of this. She said, it sounds like she thought it was a bit of a... it's a vacation from reality for a little time, I guess. She says in the house you don't have to worry about your bills.
Yep.
You don't have to worry about anything.
Yep.
So she didn't regret it. So you confided in me, Marcus. You're considering going on the show. I think you should. No, that's not true. We'll cut that bit out.
If you pitched it to me 3 months without bills and responsibility, sounds great. The thing different to other reality shows, particularly something like MasterChef, to me, MasterChef, there definitely is that platform to get a job within the industry, minimum.
Yeah.
Maximum, you know, your own TV show, your own guest bits and bobs.
Yeah.
This one, is there a career outlet for them? Do you think a lot of them or some of them are there thinking, get my face on TV, get interviewed, I might be able to pick up some shifts doing breakfast radio on an FM station or...
Oh, well, that is absolutely an opportunity because just think of all the famous names that have come out of this show. I mean, there's... I don't know. I don't know anyone.
Case closed.
The end. Two princes in the news this week, Marcus. What are they called? William and Harry?
Yes.
I think it was a documentary was broadcast. I didn't see it, but they spoke apparently about their mum, Prince Di.
Diana. Yep.
Must be an anniversary of her passing.
Yeah, I think 20 years has passed since that sad day, and obviously I've seen some footage of the boys when she died. They were just young fellas, and now they're grown men and talking about it. Still a major impact on their lives, as you could imagine.
Yep, they did talk about it, and major impact, although Prince Harry said something during the doco that caught a few eyes, and that was that he said he's only cried about the passing of his mum twice.
Okay.
He said he cried at the funeral, and he looking at that vision, it looked like he was, what, maybe six?
Yeah, he wouldn't have been much older, I would have thought.
So, and then over the next 20 years, he just cried once more.
Hmm.
So that grabbed a few people.
I guess the initial impression is that's not a lot. It seems like you'd probably go through a lot more grieving than that, especially the circumstances surrounding it and the apparent closeness the princes had with their mum. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess... Yeah, it does raise a bit of debate, doesn't it?
It does raise some debate, and it's prompted one reporter to go a little deeper and work out why don't men cry as much as women? Because that's pretty much accepted, I think.
Yeah, I think that's pretty commonplace. Women just seem to turn on the waterworks a bit more.
Is it that simple, though? Let's have a look, because this reporter has really dug deep into the science behind all this.
Of course.
Professor... Ad Vingerhoots. He conducted some research in Holland, in case the name didn't tip you off. He's working in Holland. He's done some studies and found out that women cry between 30 and 64 times a year.
So 30 to 30. So that's how many a month? It's five times a month?
Yeah.
Six times?
Is it? I'd say 64 times a year. That's
Yeah, I reckon. Sorry, put you on the spot. Yeah, 5 or 6 times they're crying a month. That's once a week.
We're both excellent with numbers. It's on potentially more than once a week.
More than once a week.
Let's average it out and say about once a week. As opposed to men, Professor Vingerhoots discovered that men cry between 6 and 17 times a year.
To me, that sounds high.
Well, 17 sounds high, doesn't it?
It does, so that's more than once a month.
This is in Holland, though. I don't know.
Pretty emotional over there, yeah.
I don't know. You know, maybe I burnt the strudel. Or maybe my clogs are rubbing
hurting
on my heels.
They're the wrong size.
That's racist, isn't it?
I guess so. Got a splinter in my clogs.
I got some good Dutch friends, though, so that's not even true. If that was racist, I will cop that. I'm sorry, but 17 does sound like a bit. That sounds like the high end. 6 times a year on the low end. Even on the high end, 17 times a year, that is well under how often women are crying.
To me, I would have thought it's about the emotional makeup of a man versus woman, but is it bigger than that?
Well, I think there's a few factors here. A psychologist by the name of Georgia Ray has really done some work on this, and she discovered that men cry less for reasons related to both nature and nurture. Men have significant lower levels of prolactin, which is a hormone found in emotional tears, because there are different types of tears. You know, if you get a bug in your eye,
yes,
your tears will come out.
So would that count to the stat, you reckon? Bug in my eye.
That particular study, yeah. I don't know.
And how would? Sorry to just go on a tangent, but how did they have a little census? Tested water drops, or they just surveyed guys and said, how often do you reckon you cry?
Well, you think there's a guy just berating the participants until they broke down?
Holding a little cup under the eye.
Well, I don't know about that study, but...
Continue on, sorry.
There are emotional tears and non-emotional tears. Mm. So this hormone, which is what you find in the emotional tears, women produce a lot more of it. So that's just a science reason there. Why men don't cry as much.
Okay.
But then the psychologist notes there is also societal stereotypes which discourage men from crying emotional tears.
Don't be a girl. Stop crying.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably
a
message that was put out there.
It was.
For many.
So the schoolyards of the 1980s were a tough place. You didn't want to be caught shedding a tear.
No.
Imagine even growing up in the 50s.
Oh, no tears at all.
I wonder what it's like now. Are we a bit more enlightened now? Is crying in the schoolyard?
No, I think kids are still kids, but probably teachers would, if it happened within a supervision of a teacher, there might be a bit more, you know, empathy and. But nah, kids are brutal, whatever generation, I think.
I don't know if you had this growing up. This would have been in primary school for me, but there was the kid, and there was the boy who had cried one time. And so everybody always remembered forever after he was the one who cried.
Yeah, there were people like that that exposed their underbelly and forever were vulnerable to, let's see if we can make this guy cry again.
Yeah, sort of like the kid that vomited that time. Like they you just don't shake that. Maybe you can move past it these days, but I remember... Once you got labelled with one of those things, it stuck. Now, let's move on. Back to the tears. All of this raises a bigger question. Male or female, doesn't matter. Why do any of us even cry at all?
Yeah.
Charles Darwin thought that it was completely useless, like it was just a redundant evolutionary hangover. There was no reason for us to cry anymore. It was just... I don't know. Maybe that was in the day when it was.
It's funny though. I reckon you feel better when you cry. Like it's almost like it cleanses the tension in your face or something.
What an interesting point you make, because Dr. William Frey says that crying releases toxins. He says that emotional tears carry more of some protein, and that when you're crying these emotional tears, the toxins come out and it actually instigates a healing process.
Yeah.
I'll also add that that is completely unfounded and no one has actually been able to prove that. So it's not really thought to be the case.
Well, it runs with my thinking, doesn't it? That it, there's some sort of release there that, relaxes your face or something. Or proteins.
Yeah, toxins. Gets the toxins out.
Yeah.
Could be a new kind of facial therapy, you know, just cry away the toxins.
Mm.
And they don't have, well, they don't, emotional tears might even include, you know, crying from laughter maybe.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to just be sad.
Yeah.
Because if you laugh hard enough, tears come out.
That would be probably more my quota in a year. There'd be more laughter tears.
Mm. Yeah. I often have you in tears of laughter in the office. That has never happened. Now, this guy, this is the last little piece of research I have to talk about crying. Dr. Nick Knight, a London PhD guy. He reckons there's a really simple reason, explanation why humans of any gender cry. He reckons the emotional response to events originate in our limbic system. Don't know what that is.
Hmm.
Which is hardwired to your nervous system. Don't really know what that is. All this adds up to, he thinks, when you feel like crying, your emotions alert your nervous system, and that instructs your body to let the tears flow.
Oh, so it's all linked. It's all hardwired to spill out.
Yep. Now we'll just need to research the limbic and the nervous systems, and we'll have a good grasp on this.
Tim, tell us about your crying career. Are you a strictly tragedies, hardship, or can you well up about anything?
Oh, no, I'm not a big cry. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I've never cried. I'm not going to do that.
No.
But I'm not a big crier. I can't really think. Some people will talk about the movies that make them cry. I can't offhand think of any.
I was thinking about it. I feel like, I mean, this is an interesting study, but it doesn't, I mean, for a man, I reckon you can well up without the tears coming. Does that make sense?
Ah, yeah.
So that would be similar to a woman crying.
Welling up. Mm. Yeah.
So, for some reason, when I get overtired, TV ads get to me.
Really?
Yes. There are a couple at the moment, which
wow.
I'm really embarrassed about.
Do you want to share?
Of course. One's, I think it's about tomato sauce. and the dad picks up the tomato sauce and moves it to the kid in a sort of robot arm fashion.
Yeah.
And the girl, and it shows time passing, the girl growing up and no longer finding the sauce passing robot arm funny.
Yeah.
Until she has her own kid and he does the robot arm, and just the generation just gets to me.
Yeah, I have seen that. That is emotional. You're right. Yeah. Hang on, but were you still getting affected by that before you became a dad?
No, it's hard to say. I don't think so. I think it is the whole connecting with it.
Yeah, because that's the case, I think. I reckon once you have kids, things do become more emotional. And that thing you've just described, that ad, yeah, that's a real kicker, that one. What's the other one?
Well, probably not as emotional, but it's one that's just come out. It's a McDonald's ad where a family, a mum and dad and a young girl, move from the country to the city, and she's all bummed out by what's involved in the city, and I'm getting involved in this ad, feeling all choked up for the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then they drive her to the McDonald's drive through, and that's the ad.
And she perks up? She's happy?
Yeah, yeah, because there's another kid and they share their common interest in teddy bears. But no, that one's starts to get me involved, but once mm-hmm. I saw the big golden arches, I went, nah.
Yeah, nah, that's the thing. That is an emotional moment, isn't it? But, McDonald's, no one's shedding tears over McDonald's, are they?
Almost.